The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Sports Talk 1240 is brought to you by DraftPot.com. DraftPot is changing fantasy sports. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with promo code SportsTalk1240 and receive a 100% deposit bonus up to $1,500. And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening and welcome to Sports Talk 1240 on this Sunday night, October 11th, 2015. Sitting across from me, Unqua Asanya. And we have a lot to talk about the MLB postseason. We'll get a little bit, of course, in the first quarter of the NFL season, a little bit 20 minutes into the last minute of the show. But, you know, we got the Yankees. Yes, the Yankees are out, the Mets are in. Yes, there are many questions about the first quarter of the NFL season where both New York teams are, but let's start the show with, of course, the music intro that's playing right now.
Of course.
you wouldn't have it any though.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm going to use this even when I get into the, you know, up there and stuff. I'm going to still use this one. Tell you one thing. We got New York's Daily News sports writer, Christy Acker, is going to be on the show. She was covering the Mets this weekend with what happened yesterday. Was probably one of the most devastating losses I think I've seen for a team, especially with all the momentum going on them. And we saw Gary Davenport from Bleacher Report NFL Analysis talking about the first quarter of the season and some remarkable wins today so far that I've seen. So let's start off with the Mets because, you know, the Mets, they won game one on Friday against Kershaw. Kershaw still continues with his postseason struggles. Same thing as David Price says in the other series against the Rangers. They won that game. Our momentum team was shifting onto them. They scored two runs on Granke, you know, solo home run from Cespedes, solo home run from one of the young hitters. And he's going to be a rising star, actually, in this league, most likely. But there's a little struggle with Syndergaard in the sixth inning. I think that's happened with the slide. If you want to play that slide right now.
I mean, let's face it. When we talk about what the Mets did right this series, the starting pitchers did the job.
Yeah.
You know, you got seven shutout innings from DeGrom in game one. Game two, listen, Syndergaard gave you as much as he could give you. But in case you've been, you know, away from the sports world from the past 24 hours and you're in the New York metropolitan area and you have no idea why Mets fans are so furious and waiting for Monday, in the bottom of the seventh inning, this is what happened last night.
1-2 pitch. Swinging a shot towards second. Murphy's got it. Underhand flip. Tejada dumped hard. The out at second base, but the run scores. It is 2-2, and Tejada's hurt. It was a hard, hard slide at second base by who else but Chase Utley.
That's a late slide to me. He didn't start that slide until he was just about on top of Tejada at second base.
Josh Lewin and Howie Rose on the call on AM 710 last night, the radio home of the New York Mets in the New York area. And, yep, they went nuts in the booth. And if you're watching that live, it's really very split. I mean, if you joined us the last hour with Ozzie Smith speaking to our own Bill Donahue, Ozzie said it wasn't that bad, and also that Ruben Tejada should never have turned his back. And in that case, I think, even though, yes, I do think it was a dirty slide, but there are a couple things that really come to mind when you look at the way that the play unfolded. This is how we learned early on that middle of the infield defense was going to be a problem for the Mets.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, Daniel Murphy isn't a natural second baseman. He's had to sort of be, you know, grow accustomed to the position. And Ruben Tejada, I mean, he was supposed to have the job like 3 years ago. But it's been a constant timeshare between him, Wilmer Flores, and whoever else the Mets seem to trot up and down their farm system. But what's tough about the play is that the flip from Murphy was way off.
Yeah, it was way off.
And it didn't give Tejada much of a chance to make a good play. He secured it, and to his credit, he's got his foot as close to the base as possible. But the fact that his back was turned made a bad slide because, yes, it was a dirty slide. It made the slide that much worse because I've seen many a veteran shortstop take it and be able to at least swing straight through the bag. That's what you learn in high school. It's what you learn in college. When you feel the flip, no matter where it is, you've got to be facing where you're throwing.
Exactly.
Otherwise, a slide like Utley's will do what it did last night.
You know, this isn't the first time Utley's done this to Tejada either. A few years ago, he's done the same thing to him. and he's done it to other players as well. But, you know, Ellie's been considered, I guess, with this play right now, you could probably consider him as one of the dirty players in the league in terms of sliding against anybody. And it makes you feel even more dangerous as a shortstop when Ellie's going to run at you. He's going to run at you. And it was pretty clear on the replay that Ellie did not touch the base at all. I mean, he wasn't even close to it. The Dodgers challenged it to see if Tejada didn't touch the base, and there was no neighborhood play involved with it, of course. But, you know, the funny thing about the umpires is that we've seen umpires make a lot of bad calls throughout the MLB, and even in history. I mean, I seen one a few years ago where they called him out on first base, and he was 2 foot away from it, and he was out, and that was just ridiculous right there. I see another call where he ended the game, and it was a ball clearly hitting the ground, and it was a strikeout. I mean, it was just a lot of bizarre calls I've seen umpires have done, and this is why I keep saying to everybody, umps are probably the worst referees in all sports. I mean, let's just get honest right here. It's probably baseball first. It's probably football because of all the penalties on the flags on every single call. And basketball has made some bad calls because now it's a soft league right now. So you can make a case about all these referees, but I never liked the referees to begin with. Even when I played sports, I never liked the referees because I feel like they always had grudges against anybody no matter what. You try to be reasonable with them, but they always try to go against you, and then something bad happens.
And we say this with the knowledge that, yes, being an official in any league, whether it be high school, collegiate, professional, it's tough. And we understand that you have to make judgment calls, bang, bang, on the fly, and get paid for it and take the slack for it. But with that being said, for that particular call, it's funny because there was a rule going around that I and a few others retweeted that we thought buffered the argument that Utley was totally in the wrong. But in fact, what the rule itself said was pertaining to a batted ball in play. It didn't say anything about an assist. It didn't say anything about a flip. So within the letter of the law, yes, Utley did not break the rules per se. But with that being said, you don't gun for somebody's legs.
You don't gun it at all.
And you don't do it in a way that you just totally avoid the base.
That wasn't even a baseball play. It's like Pedro Martinez said on MLB postgame. That was not a baseball play. That was a dirty play. But you got to give credit to what Gary Sheffield said, too. It was a bad throw by Murphy. That's a hard spin around it. And then, you know what? One thing that questioned about it was that Terry Collins didn't really exactly appeal to it. And, you know, that's something that we got to talk about more. And we got Christy Acker from New York Daily News here. Christy, thank you for joining the show. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happened within the 24 hours of what the Mets happened and a devastating loss. How's the atmosphere like with the Mets locker room after that loss?
They were pretty angry.
Yeah, I could tell. I mean, you know, you were there when Tejada got the injury. Can you explain to me how he fell exactly? Like, I know it was a fracture of right leg. Were you there with him at the time?
Was I with him?
No, I went with him, but you heard about the report saying that he had a fractured leg. Who told you that? The doctors?
No, they announced it over the press box.
Okay.
We're not allowed down there when they're playing.
So, you know, I got a question you exactly on this whole situation with the call. I mean, the Dodgers pretty much had their chance to replay it, and they go against it, and they got Tejada saying he didn't touch the bag, it was safe. But I have a question about Terry Collins. How come he didn't exactly appeal to the call? Because he had the right to do it, even if the call was...
He did.
So why didn't he do it?
He was out there, and they didn't accept the appeal. So they went through every one of his arguments and ruled against him.
That's very interesting. I can't believe that. I mean, as an umpire, especially with the call like that, you have the right to appeal, but I guess that wasn't the call. So where has the series gone in terms of momentum right now? Because the Mets won the first game. Now they lost this game. It seems like all the Mets have shifted back to the Dodgers, even though they're going to on the road to Citi Field. So where do you think the series is going to go as of right now?
Well, I would think that, the momentum. The Dodgers took one of two at home. They lost home field advantage, basically. So now it's down to Matt Harvey versus Brett Anderson. And honestly, you've got to take Matt Harvey, don't you?
You have to.
So, you know, the problem that the thing that concerns me most is they need to get depth from Harvey because their bullpen looks like it's in shambles right now. Clearly, Terry does not trust Tyler Clifford anymore, going to Bartolo Colon in that situation. So, you know, they've got to get through that. They've got to deal with that. They've got to get Tyler Clifford back on track. He can't throw his changeup, and his changeup is his most effective pitch. So that's a concern. I like where they are in terms of going in and having Matt Harvey at home, first playoff game in the new ballpark. So I think they're in a good spot right now. I'm a little concerned about game four. I'm not really sure. I understand Steven Matz is a very talented pitcher, but he has 6 major league starts. I'm not sure I would turn over a crucial game to him, but that's where we are.
Christy Atsunkwa, I hope you're having a good weekend so far. You saw the play in real time. What did you take away from it?
That's a tough one. When you see it in real time, it's hard. When you see it in real time, it's very hard to make that call. Then you see it in slow motion and, replay after replay. It's clearly he slid late, which is very, unsportsmanlike to me. He slid high. I don't think he hit the dirt until after he hit Tejada. And he went, right for his leg as far as it looks to me. So to me, it looked like a dirty play.
Now, I read earlier today from you, about the new replacement for Tejada that's going to be up on the roster, Matt Reynolds, who's coming up from Las Vegas. What can Mets fans expect to see, if they expect to see him at all, really, this series?
I think you might see him, yeah. I mean, if they're bringing him up, I think he's going to get a shot. He has a live bat. He had a tough year this year. He had an injury. He had a very good year in 2014, and he was the hot commodity in spring training. Played very well at Major League spring training camp. In fact, won an award for the, top non-roster invitee. He's a good shortstop, and he has a nice swing. I think it's a tough time to make your Major League debut. you're playing against, your chance is probably going to come against a Kershaw or a Greinke at some point. That's not exactly ideal. So I guess we'll see.
Exactly how you put into factor in terms of the Mets offense, because, they scored 3 runs on Friday. They scored 2 runs on Saturday. Is it more just they're facing a great pitcher? Now they have a chance to actually do some damage against a pitcher that's not as good as Greinke or Kershaw?
Well, and that's a lot of pitchers that are not as good as Greinke.
Yeah, that's one thing, yeah.
Yeah, and you would like to see their bats continue. I mean, what concerned me, Greinke was good last night. Conforto had a great home run. Just a laser shot. Cespedes had his first home run since September 14th, which is a good sign. I talked to some people that think Travis d'Arnaud is starting to come back around. He's a streaky hitter, so that's good if he starts getting back into his streak. But the thing that has concerned me since the last week of the season is I don't see those same live bats that I saw when they were winning games in August and early September. So, I would hope for their sake that, yes, they can tee that up against Anderson and get that going.
We're talking to Christy Ackert from the New York Daily News, Mets beat writer. Now, usually it's their crosstown rival, the Yankees, who are really dependent on the long ball. And the Mets, do you see their offense kind of falling in that same route, particularly because of the last 2 games?
Yeah, the last 2 games, that's what powered them, obviously. That 7th-inning rally that they had Friday night, however, showed a little bit of what they were doing all along. They were mixing it in with some really, some key walks. 3 walks off of Kershaw, and that walk by Tejada was brilliant. Fell behind 0-2 and comes back and gets a walk. It was a pretty brilliant play. And then, just a key single by David Wright. They were doing a lot of that when they were winning a lot of games in a row, mixed in with the home run. So they need the balance of it. And, the only thing we saw on Saturday night were the home runs.
Do you believe the bounce will come back with David Wright if he can somehow get his hitting back, even though he had that hit on Friday, that maybe at home with the crowd going on it and him being a lifetime Met player, you think that will give him some confidence, maybe get some hits, single or double, if anything?
Maybe. He tends to get amped up in those big moments. I mean, his return from the DL, he had a home run, and, first playoff game in 9 years, he gets the key hit. So, I certainly think he will be riding the adrenaline on Monday night.
Christy, I remember when we spoke to you a few months ago, actually back in July, and you saw Michael Conforto play at the Futures game that Sunday during All-Star Weekend. Fast forward to what you saw last night. Is he still a derivative of the same player he was then, or has he advanced that much more since he starred that day in Cincinnati?
Well, he's built on what he was. He's clearly learning every day. You see him get better and better. I think the thing that has surprised me the most is what a good outfielder he is. He didn't have the reputation of being a great outfielder, and he's proven himself to be pretty good. I mean, he's certainly, less of a liability out there than Michael Kadire right now. you see him making strike. He has such a good eye for the strike zone. I think his on-base percentage ended up being like 100 points higher than his batting average. He has a great sense of the strike zone, and he's been able to adjust to that, and he's been able to learn pitchers. So, I just see him building on what he was. He always had the strong foundation with that nice short swing, but he's a smart player, and he's a cage rat. He's always in the batting cage. He's always around the video room. He's always learning.
How much do you think Met fans will view tomorrow at Chase Utley, considering he was a Phillies player as well, and now it seems like he has a reputation for being a dirty player with plays like this, and actually back then he's done some players against that as well. You think should Harvey do anything above the game in terms of to protect his players, or just pitch the way you got to pitch?
I think you can't do it now. It's the playoffs.
Yeah, that's the one thing.
You cannot risk him getting tossed. That's your advantage going into this game, is that you have an ace going against Brett Anderson. You don't throw that away just because of this. I will tell you this, and for all the stuff that is said about Matt Harvey, love him or hate him, you can't deny the fact that he is a very good teammate. There were pitchers that were bad-mouthing Wilmer Flores, behind his back every time he'd make a mistake, whining to the coaches about it. Not Matt Harvey. And even privately, he would say, kid's trying his best, I'm out there to pick him up. So he's a good teammate. He was angry. He was angry last night. I talked to him very briefly. He was angry, but he knows what his position is. He's got to go out and beat them.
And it looks like they're going to do it without Chase Utley. We just got a press release from Major League Baseball itself. Because of the slide, Utley's out for games 3 and 4. So the Mets aren't going to be facing him in the box at all. And seeing that Utley's numbers against Harvey were pretty good, 333, if I remember correctly, more of Howie Kendrick in that lineup, that gives Matt Harvey probably a better chance to beat the Dodgers tomorrow, no?
You would think so. And it takes this whole incident, it takes it out of the playoffs. It'll be dealt with next year, but likely this will not, nobody in a game five, nobody's going to be dealing with this. So that takes Harvey off the hook. It takes a little more pressure off of him in a big situation.
So I guess I could ask you this one question before I let you go. Where do you see the series go? You think the Mets win it in 4, or you think it's going to be on the road?
I don't think I said that I thought the Mets were going to win it.
Oh, that's I forgot about
that. I picked the Dodgers in 4, and I'll kind of stick with that.
You really think the Dodgers are going to win on the road at Citi Field?
I won't stick with 4, but I think the Dodgers are a more experienced team, and the Mets bullpen concerns me.
Well, they certainly are concerning, yeah.
Let her stick with a pick, man. Come on now.
Well, it's something, but we'll see what happens. But thank you for being on the show. We'll be in contact, of course. Hopefully, you have the Mets have pull out a win or two tomorrow. Win or two this week. But we'll see what happens.
Christy, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Also, I think she picks the Dodgers to win the series, which is very, very.
Well, she's being objective. I give her all the credit in the world for it, and I can't say I blame her, because with as much momentum as the Mets were coming in with, she brought up two very good points. Number one, as faulty as the Dodgers' bullpen is, the Mets' bullpen is worse.
It is a lot worse. And it seems like Starfish got to go seven or eight innings.
Because outside of, let's say you call Kenzie Jensen, you know, the closer for the Dodgers, yeah, and Juris Familia of the Mets. Let's call that a wash because they're both really good pitchers. After that, you have Belisario, you have Pedro Robles, who at least have electric arms out of that Dodgers bullpen. The Mets have Hansel Robles, pretty solid when you can bring in someone and throw in 100 right off the bat. But after that, and maybe and Tyler Clippard, who has seen his fair share of overuse over the stretch run, who else do they have? Addison Reed has been erratic for years. I'm surprised we saw him last night. I don't think Bartolo Colon got enough work last night because...
Yeah, I feel like he should have pitched more, to be honest.
Exactly, because keeping in mind, even after the Tejada play, it would have been a double play with a different middle infield. Yeah. Point blank period. With a different, more agile defensive middle infield, that's a double play. The Mets still have the lead.
That was an unquestionable call, though, by the umps, because I still understand how they say that, you know, Ellie was safe, but they didn't see Tejada get hit by that and intentionally got hit by that.
And what was crazy is, as what Christy was saying during our interview with her, she said that they denied his appeal.
Yeah,
after seeing the replay, I don't understand how you can do that.
You can't deny an appeal. You have a right to see something. He should have just been there on the field just waiting for his appeal because he should have appealed for that call, and it probably would have been out. And to be honest, anything should have been over if that whole happened situation. I mean, this is basically what happened, and I'll just play a clip right now, and it's from the Karate Kid. This is basically what happened with Utley and Tejada, and Don Adling probably saying something to Utley about the situation.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that?
Listen, see?
No mercy.
That's basically what you just said to Dominic. He said, you know, no mercy on the slide, but, you know, that's basically what happened.
That's how you know Don Mattingly's still a Yankee at heart. He still wanted to go get the Mets, so he said, listen, Chase, I know you're a former Philly. Go get him.
Well, you know, you got Mets fans listening on the show. You call in at 631-888-8811. We'll take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the Mets and also the Mets' chances of winning the World Series if they advance. And we'll get into the NFL season, the first quarter of the season with Gary Davenport from Bleacher Report.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Hey, fantasy sports fans. DraftPot has an exclusive offer for Sports Talk 1240 listeners. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit up to $1,500. That's right. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit up to $1,500. What are you waiting for? Do it now.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Yeah.
Whether you're a couple enjoying a romantic meal for two, a family wanting to dine in a relaxed and friendly setting, or a larger party wanting to celebrate a special occasion, Miller Place Pastoria always combines a warm welcome with the finest contemporary Italian cuisine and wines, also serving up Long Island's favorite pizza. We're located right on Route 25A in Miller Place. Come visit us today and check us out online at mppastoria.com.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Back here on Sports Talk 1240, Luke on the sign sitting across from me. You know, Met fans, yeah, this is your chance to speak up about this issue because, you know, to be honest, even as a Yankee fan, and you know, I was watching the game and the Mets with this call. As a person that saw baseball, I haven't seen that was a baseball play at all because I kind of thought that for sure it should have been an ending. It should have been 2-1 because if that play ever happened, the runner shouldn't even score. That's the rule. And you know, one of our colleagues here, Anthony Beers, is on the show on Sports Talk 1240. I hope he's listening to the show. You know, he had a call here saying if and in the judgment of the umpire, a base runner willfully and deliberately interferes with a batter, batted, or a fielder in the act of fielding a batted ball with the obvious intent to break up a double play, the ball is dead. The umpire shall call the runner out for interference and also call out the batter runner because of the action of his teammate. In no event may be bases be run or runs scored because of such actions by a runner. So, even in my theory, when I thought of it before, there shouldn't even have been scored, the inning should have been over, it should have been 2-1, basically. And the fact that the umpires missed that, and it tells you why umpires are probably the worst in the call, pretty much what it is.
I mean, but again, that's really the rule that everybody's really debating, because keep this in mind. We're going to read it again. If, in the judgment of the umpire, a base runner willfully and deliberately interferes with a batted ball or a fielder in the act of fielding a batted ball with the obvious intent. Let's keep in mind that in the letter of the law, Tejada, the flip to Tejada doesn't count. Okay? If it had happened to Daniel Murphy as he was fielding the ball, automatically Utley would have been out. No problem with that. The problem is Murphy had already fielded the ball. So it was no longer a batted ball. It was in the position of Daniel Murphy. And as we all know, as soon as a fielder is in contact with the ball and it's already in the scorecard as the player who fielded it, by the time Daniel Murphy fielded that grounder, it was going to be 4-something-something.
Yeah, exactly.
So because of that, it's not a batted ball. And that was really getting hashed out big time last night. And in that, and it's because of that that the slide from Utley was legal. It was dirty, but it wasn't illegal. Now, he didn't touch the base. So there's no way he should have been safe, and there's no way the run should have scored.
Yeah, and, you know, I saw
– it should have been a dead ball.
I saw that question, Collins. I'm not trying to, like, stand on the field saying I want the appeal. I deserve the appeal. I should have been part of the process, but I guess it wasn't. But Utley's out for the two games at Citi Field, which is probably a good thing for him because he probably would have been booed and pretty much, like – I know for sure when his name would have been called, he would have been really, really booed and probably – I don't think Harvey would ever hit him, and I know a lot of players wanted to make sure he was hit, but now they don't have that chance, so now the Mets just got to focus on winning the game. Now, in terms of their odds, now I had a website here in the Vegas Insider. Future odds, you know, Texans, they've been pretty much hot in the postseason. They're up 2-0 against the Blue Jays. But they have a 3-1 chance to win the World Series. The Cardinals have a 4-1 chance. The Kansas City Royals, who just lost today, actually against the Astros, they have a 5-1 chance. The Mets have a 6-1. The Cubs have a 7-1. The Dodgers, if they even somehow they advance, 15-2. The Astros are 8-1, and the Blue Jays are 10-1. Now the Mets at 6-1. That's kind of high, to be honest, for a team that just, you know, offensively they were not exactly the best offense in the league. They probably much stink throughout the whole year until they made that trade. Now they're 6-1. Now the Rangers, that's so interesting. They're 3-1 after all the moves that they had a. Pretty much a struggle throughout the whole season. The Rangers somehow just catch it up. They won a division, and now they're pretty much getting to the ALCS if they win tonight. But it's very interesting to see the Mets that are in the situation right now where they have two games at home, and now no Utley. Their focus is just to win these two games in advance. But the question is, can they advance based on the fact that the bullpen is actually leaking for them? And you have Matt Harvey could probably pitch six or seven innings. I mean, would you put your closer in there for two innings?
You give
Paul Rivera?
I think you do have to pull Rivera, because if we've learned over the past two games that the bullpen is a mixed bag. It really is. So as far as game three is concerned, if you get seven out of Harvey, I'm throwing Familia in there for two. He hasn't, to be fair, he hasn't done that much this season. I don't think he's done it at all this season, in fact.
Yeah.
He's gotten five out saves and four out saves for necessity's sake. But you got to do something.
They got to do something, because if they go on to a situation where it's 2-1 and Matt Harvey's struggling in the seventh inning and they got to take him out, they just got to put him in, because it's the only way they have a chance of winning the game. And, you know, I think their hitting's going to come back around. I know they've been focused on the long ball so far. And, you know, David Wright, hopefully he'll get a single probably tomorrow. You have Cespedes who'll probably get it in, if anything. But, you know, switching from the baseball side, we got to the NFL side now. You know, first quarter season's here. We have NFL analysis from Bleacher Report, Gary Davenport. And, you know, a lot of interesting wins today. Gary, I wanted to first say thank you for being on the show once again.
My pleasure.
Yeah, there's been a lot of bizarre wins today. I mean, Bengals won against Seattle at home. The Broncos still undefeated despite their struggles with Peyton Manning throwing two picks. Brady had a slow start, and they still won against the Cowboys. Was there any surprises today in terms of whoever won and who's still undefeated right now?
You know, among the undefeated teams, I don't know that I was really surprised. I kind of thought the Broncos might have a little more trouble with an Oakland team. The Raiders are a better football team than they were. I'm not going to say that Oakland's a playoff team or anything, but they're not necessarily the punchline that they used to be. So I didn't know that that was going to be the easiest two games for the Denver Broncos. Was very impressed by the Cincinnati Bengals coming back from a 17-point fourth-quarter deficit
yeah.
to defeat the Seattle Seahawks. Says a lot about their intestinal fortitude. You know, maybe this is a different Bengals team from the past 4 years when we've seen them make the playoffs and then just fall apart. And then they can ride that momentum into the playoffs. The Patriots and the Green Bay Packers look like the class of the NFL with impressive victories. You know, the Patriots showed again today that they can win a football game any way they need to. The first 3 weeks of the season, Tom Brady was throwing the ball all over the place, putting up all kind of ridiculous numbers. Today it was only 275 passing yards, I think, and a couple scores. And they won running the ball and playing defense. And that's the Patriots for you. That's what makes the Patriots so impressive, is that they're not only able to change their identity from week to week, or even quarter to quarter, depending on how the flow of the game is going, but they're willing to do that. So many teams in the NFL, they either can't find an identity, or once they do, they just get stuck in it, and they will not change, even if the circumstances say that they should. And the Patriots are not like that. They will change things up on the fly quickly.
It's interesting you say that, because, you know, you look at identities, and you look at the Bengals, and it looks like with the emergence of Tyler Effort from the tight end position, looks like they could do more on the playmaking side besides A.J. Green. And you got the running backs now. They didn't run the ball successfully today, but they had a lot of touchdowns from the tight end, and they also had that field goal, and Dalton had a running touchdown. Do you believe the Bengals are considering themselves to be maybe the front runners for the AFC, maybe have home field advantage in the playoffs, or still think it's the Patriots?
I think they've got a good shot at locking up one of those top two seeds and buying it. And I don't see any way that they're not going to win the AFC North at this point. I mean,
yeah.
The Ravens are 1-4, the Browns, yeah, they're 2-3, but it's the Cleveland Browns. And the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to be without Ben Roethlisberger for another month. So I think that by the time Pittsburgh even gets Big Ben back, they're going to be playing for a wild card spot. That's the Bengals division to lose. And you hit the nail on the head. You know, we're seeing Tyler Eifert emerge as another target for Dalton in the passing game. They got Marvin Jones back
yeah.
after he missed the entire 2014 season with a foot injury. You know, it's not just A.J. Green, and they've got arguably the best 1-2 punch in the backfield in the NFL, and Jeremy Hill and Giovanni Bernard. Granted, Hill has struggled a little bit these past few weeks, but, I mean, it's your classic thunder and lightning. You've got Hill, the between-the-tackles bruiser, and Bernard's, you know, the quicker, shiftier back who can catch the ball out of the backfield. Dalton's got a plethora of weapons, and his offensive line is protecting him great. Headed into today, they had only given up two sacks in the first 4 weeks of the season. Gave up a couple today, but when you've got a quarterback who's being protected, it's going to make that quarterback look good. And Andy Dalton may not be Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady, but he's not Blake Bortles either.
Yeah.
A very good football team that's won their first five games. And the last time the Cincinnati Bengals went 5-0, they represented the AFC in the Super Bowl.
Interesting.
Gary Yunqua here. Happy Sunday. I want to take a look at Tom Brady's numbers here through the first few weeks and change. In 2007, 1,118 yards, 13 TDs, 2 picks. This year, nearly 1,400 yards passing, 11 TDs, and 0 interceptions. Where in the world is this coming from?
He's just incredible. He gets rid of the football quickly. He finds the open man. I mean, you look at what he's doing this year relative to 2007. He also doesn't have a Randy Moss to throw to this year.
Yeah.
Granted, he does have a Rob Gronkowski, which is a nice thing to have because he's virtually impossible to cover. I mean, he's working with Julian Edelman and Danny Amendola. Edelman is a great wide receiver in his own way, but he's not a game-breaking, have-to-double-team-him-all-the-time type of talent. And they're doing it with game plan, and they're doing it with execution. And Tom Brady certainly isn't playing like a 38-year-old, or 36-year-old, I believe. And given that those four games were supposed to be the four that he was supposed to sit out over Deflategate, yeah, there's pretty good numbers. I'm sure Roger Goodell's not exactly smiling about it.
In that case, let's look at their division rival, the New York Jets, 3-1 through 4 weeks of play. And when we spoke to you earlier, before the season started, you saw the Jets at least having a good shot at making a run at the wild card. What have you seen over the past 4 weeks of them, even though they're on a bye week?
You know, they've played even a little bit better on defense than I necessarily expected it to. Ryan Fitzpatrick's been a little bit better than I expected it to. They've had more success throwing the football than I thought they would. I figured they'd come out, run the ball, play defense, try to keep games close, and win that way. You know, Brandon Marshall's putting up great numbers. Granted, he did have that episode with that lateral, but we just won't talk about that. It's Brandon Marshall. You got to take the good with the bad.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got more skill position talent than they've had in several years. Fitzpatrick's playing as well as any Jets quarterback has in several years, and that defense is just loaded from front to back. I wondered what Todd Bowles was going to be able to do with that kind of defensive talent. He's done more or less exactly what I expected him to do, put together one of the best defenses in the National Football League.
What do you think also the addition of Sheldon Richardson to the Jets now?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with Sheldon Richardson over these next several weeks. I'm curious to see because I think it might – give us an indication of what his future with the franchise is. Given how well Leonard Williams has played with Muhammad Wilkerson's contract coming up after the year,
yeah,
you know, I don't know if the Jets are going to look at Richardson as a guy they want to keep around. And if you don't want to keep him around, do you start him over Williams? Or is it Sheldon Richardson that becomes the rotational depth guy behind your starters, Williams and Wilkerson? So it's going to be interesting to see because Sheldon's still going to have the league to deal with. And at this point, if he makes any more mistakes, he's going to get one of those Darryl Washington suspensions where you just go to the phantom zone and no one ever hears from him.
That's true. Well, you know, Chris Ivory came back against the Dolphins before their bye week, and, you know, he put up pretty much – he got career high in rushing, and he had a touchdown. Do you believe that this offense dictates what Ivory does on the field?
Chris Ivory's always run hard. The knock on him has always been the nagging injuries, and he just hasn't been able to stay healthy for an extended period of time. And it's not, you know, catastrophic injuries like Jamal Charles suffered today, unfortunately. It's just little stuff, you know, a hamstring pull or a knee strain, and he just doesn't seem to get over it, and it lingers for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. That hasn't been the case so far this year, and it's very important for the Jets that it not become the case because they've had a little more success throwing the football than I expected, but it's still a team that's very much about the run, setting up the pass. The Jets are playing old-school football, which I kind of like.
We're talking to Gary Davenport from Bleacher Report. I have to ask you, with Geno Smith still lurking on that sideline, apparently getting better, a few fans and even Bob Wischusen on last week's broadcast went as far as saying that Fitzpatrick was missing some pretty obvious throws. Even if the Jets keep winning, do you see any possible scenario where Geno Smith takes over as the starting QB?
Not unless the bottom falls out and they stop winning. I mean, a 3-1 football team, you don't fix what isn't broken. I'm not going to say that Ryan Fitzpatrick is a world beater at quarterback. That would be kooky talk. But he's okay. He's had some success at the NFL level. He's had more success than Geno Smith has had at the NFL level. It's just, like I said, it's a matter of you don't fix what isn't broken. Now, granted, they go on a 3- or 4-game losing streak. There's a, the title will dominate the talk radio era. Everyone will want Geno Smith out there. And then maybe you revisit it then. But right now, I mean, enjoy the success you're having. Don't tinker with stuff that shouldn't be tinkered with.
Makes total sense. Looking to the team, they share a stadium with the Giants, heading into halftime leading 13-6. They have a shot to grab the NFC East lead if the score holds, which pretty much blows my mind, seeing as how the rest of the division has sort of fallen by the wayside early on. Have you seen any visible improvement from them, particularly offensively?
Yeah, the offensive line's playing a little bit better. You know, it would be nice if they could get the defense semi-healthy. I said a couple weeks ago after they beat the Redskins on Thursday night, I called the Giants the favorites in the NFC East. I called a 1-2 football team the favorites in the division. And it's as much a function of the division being terrible as it is the Giants being good. I mean, we've seen happen to the Dallas Cowboys exactly what I expected to happen to the Dallas Cowboys when Romo went down. You got Brandon Weeden as quarterback. You got no Dez Bryant. You got no DeMarco Murray. They have no offense. They can't score. So they've lost 3 games in a row and are much likely falling out of first place. I expect the Giants to hold on against San Francisco.
You know, stay on the NFC side. You know, you got the Packers still undefeated. You got the Falcons still undefeated. Seahawks are struggling right now, even with Chancellor. And, you know, there's no Marshawn Lynch. The Panthers are still undefeated as well. Where do you believe that any of those teams will go to NFC to the Super Bowl in terms of home field advantage and teams trying to beat that team?
I think the Packers have got to be considered the clear front runner in the NFC, probably the most complete team in the conference. Came a defensive collapse in the second half away from making it to the Super Bowl last year and have arguably the best quarterback in the NFL in Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
The Atlanta Falcons, keep an eye on that team to sneak into that, if not the number one seed in the NFC, at least the number two seed and get that first round bye in the playoffs. I'm not saying Atlanta is a great football team. I mean, you have to take your hats off that they're 5-0. Dan Quinn is winning with running the ball and defense. He's changed the identity of that team, and the players seem to be buying into it. That defense really doesn't have that much better personnel than they had a year ago, and they're playing markedly better than that defense played in 2014. But you look at Atlanta's schedule, it was considered the easiest schedule per strength of schedule from last season entering the season, and if anything, at this point, it looks that much easier. I mean, you look outside, okay, they play Carolina twice, but Carolina, much like Atlanta, is an undefeated team that doesn't really feel like it should be undefeated. It's a team with some flaws. I know they play the Indianapolis Colts, I believe, in November, but you look at the Colts, I mean, are they scaring anyone right now?
Not at all, to be honest.
They're on a 3-game winning streak against the AFC South, which is the only division that might be worse than the NFC East. So that just doesn't really say a whole lot to me. The way the Falcons' schedule sets up right now, if they can avoid a major injury and just keep playing the way they're playing right now, that's a team that could win 12, 13 games this year.
That'll be actually a bigger accomplishment than what they had last year. And, you know, I always said that when Dan Quinn was hired for them, that he would change the defense around pretty much a scheme. And, you know, coming from him, from being a head coach, being a defensive coordinator to a head coach, you see the Seahawks, they're struggling right now without him. And it makes you be curious, was Pete Carroll, you know, calling the plays last year when you know, they went to the Super Bowl, or was it really more of Dan Quinn?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think the Seahawks' problems are a lot more. I mean, they were second in the NFL in total defense entering today's game against Cincinnati, although giving up a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter is not a good thing.
Yeah.
Their problems, to me, are mostly on the offensive side of the ball, and it's that offensive line. Russell Wilson has no time to throw the ball right now.
He's getting abused every time, yeah.
Yeah, and with Marshawn Lynch hurt, yes, Rawls had a phenomenal game today against Cincinnati, but they're not really pounding away on the ground with the consistency that you would expect them to under Marshawn Lynch, and it's putting Wilson under more pressure to move the ball through the air, and he's just they're not blocking at all, and he's getting pounded back there, and at this rate, things are not looking great for the Seattle Seahawks. I mean, I don't know if I'd Chicken Little and say the sky is falling, but after Arizona got back on track today and took care of business against Detroit, they're two games back in the division again, you know, and we're 5 weeks into the season. So those head-to-head matchups against the Cardinals are going to loom very large for the Seattle Seahawks if they want to win that division again.
Talking to Gary Davenport from Bleacher Report, sticking with the Falcons and actually putting it with the Jets, both rookie head coaches, both with teams overachieving, to say the least. Who do you think has the edge, and who's done a bigger and better job at this point?
Oh, you know, it's really hard to say. I'd almost have to call that a wash, honestly. Both guys inherited situations where there are some talent problems on one side of the ball or the other. With Dan Quinn and the Falcons, it was mostly defense. With the Jets, it was on the offensive side of the ball. The thing I always loved about Todd Bowles, and I think he's doing a great job of it in New York, is he's a guy, like I said about the Patriots, who's willing to switch things up on the fly. He's a guy who's coordinated 4-3 defenses and 3-4 defenses. He looks at his personnel, looks at the tools that he has at his disposal, and then crafts his scheme, crafts his game plan around those tools. Instead of deciding, okay, this is the way I'm going to do things because I'm this kind of coach, so I'm going to take these square pegs and bang them into round holes, and then all you ended up with is a bunch of busted holes and messed up pegs. And it blows my mind that so many coaches at the NFL level continue to do that. I mean, we saw it with Jay Gruden and Robert Griffin in Washington, D.C. You know, I'm going to make Robert Griffin a pocket quarterback. He's not a pocket quarterback. He's never going to be a pocket quarterback. And now his career is completely immolated, and the only shot he's got is probably someplace else. And you see it all the time. But the coaches you see have success are the Bill Belichicks of the world to say, okay, this is what I've got. I'm going to take it. I'm going to craft the best game plan I have from what I've got, and we're going to go win a football game.
Speaking of this idea that you sort of don't mess with what you don't have, looking at Washington right now, they come to see the Jets next week. Is this a time to start the Jets defense or try and grab them if you haven't already?
Oh, absolutely. Against the turnover machine that is Kirk Cousins, Captain Pick Six, oh, yeah.
I don't know that
I feel better about running a fantasy defense out against any quarterback in the league more than Kirk Cousins, except maybe Colin Kaepernick, because he's turning the ball over like it's going out of style, too. Let's put it this way. I went and picked up Atlanta's defense this week in 3 or 4 different fantasy leagues and rolled them out there against Washington. And since the game ended on a defensive touchdown, I bet that score looks pretty good.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, I got one more question before I let you go. You know, we're in the first quarter of the season, and some of the teams already established themselves with identity, some didn't. Do you see any sleeper teams heading into the second quarter that could probably potentially make a run and probably into the third quarter of the season?
Well, you can't call the Seattle Seahawks a sleeper team, but I think it's way too early to count them out. You know, the St. Louis Rams are a really weird team that I think could be a thorn in the side of a lot of teams down the stretch. I think you could probably say a lot the same thing about the Baltimore Ravens if they can get a little healthier. They might not make the playoffs this year, but I think they could ruin the fun for a lot of other teams. And it's going to be interesting to see what teams like Pittsburgh and San Diego, teams that look like kind of fringe playoff teams, like they, 1 week they look like they have the talent to make the playoffs, and then the next week they just look terrible. If I had to say a sleeper team that could sneak into the playoffs, I'd probably stick with one that a lot of people went with before the season. I still think the Minnesota Vikings, I mean, granted, they're 2-2, so they're a 500 football team, but I think they played a little bit better than a 500 football team, with the exception of their loss to the 49ers in week one. They played well at Denver. I mean, going to Denver and beating a Peyton Manning-led football team is not an easy task, and the Vikings didn't win the game, but they acquitted themselves very well, and that's a young football team, and I think they can build off that coming out of their bye week. And I look for them to be in the thick of it as we move into the month of December. You can say the same about Buffalo, too. They squeaked out a win today. Didn't look especially pretty. Didn't win many style points doing it, but they did win the game. And sometimes that's the next step for teams like the Bills or the Jets.
Yeah.
To take those close losses and turn them into close wins. It's the difference between going 7-9 and 10-6.
Very interesting. All right. Thank you for your time, Gary. We'll be in contact throughout the season. And also,
Go
up to tomorrow's game with Pittsburgh and Chargers.
Thanks, Gary.
Yeah, anytime.
All right. Yeah, we got Gary. You got interesting stuff there. You know, looking at the first quarter of the season, some teams established identities, like I said. Some teams didn't. Some teams are still starting to search for it, like the 49ers, for instance. They've just been a disaster throughout the season. You know, interesting thing about he said about the Vikings, and I do agree with him. The Vikings are a young team. Look like they're on the rise, something special. I don't know if they'll do it this year. Maybe they'll fight for the wild card this year. We'll find out probably this month. But you got Bridgewater, who's pretty much a playmaker when he has time in the pocket. I know he had any time against the Broncos, but he did whatever he can. Still got A.J. Peterson. Still got Mike Wallace. Kyle Rudolph is actually a solid tight end for them. He keeps getting in weapons and stuff like that. But it's going to be interesting to see what the Vikings are going to do this year.
And I think it's so funny that Teddy Bridgewater, who, remember, during this year, they were calling him a Heisman front runner during the senior year season and saying, oh, he's going to be great. He's going to be one of the best quarterbacks. And then somehow he slips to number 30 in the first round, which still blows my mind to this day.
Yeah.
Aside from, actually, no. Because Blake Bortles, no. Right now, Teddy Bridgewater is the best quarterback out of that draft class.
He is. Even though Blake Bortles had four touchdowns today against a leaky Tampa Bay defense, even though Brew Reese didn't do anything to that defense either, but you got to get great of what Bortles did. But,
like I said,
yeah.
Bridgewater is the best quarterback out of that class.
And we'll see what the Jets do. You know, Giants still playing right now. They still got the lead right now. We'll see what the Jets do next week. Maybe they'll pull out a win against the Redskins against the turnover machine of Cousins.
If they don't pull out that win, we've got a real problem.
They don't even get up by 20 against the Redskins. They've got a problem. I mean, I don't know about a close win, but they got to be up more, especially if he turns the ball at that rate and they run the football with Ivory. Even though the Redskins have a pretty solid run defense, but, you know, Dante Freeman pretty much just did a lot against them at home against the Falcons. But see what it is.
Yeah, I think they're going to be just fine.
But, you know, we got a little bit of time here. You know, NBA season started. We can talk about a lot. We'll talk about more, of course, throughout the season. In the Knicks, they played preseason basketball last week and also this Friday as well. You know, I've seen some of the gameplay. You know, I've seen what Melo can do. You know, he's pretty much on fire right now.
Man.
And Kyle Quinn, I mean, my goodness. You know, I don't know if it was him being a Queens native or something that sparked him to play better with the Knicks or something, but he's been playing pretty solid off the bench.
And listen, you got to also factor in how well he did with Norfolk State with that big upset against Missouri in his senior year before he went to the draft. He's been a solid player with Orlando the past few years.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, this is my not-so-hot take before the season starts, the Knicks are going to finish over 500. they are.
I think they have the personnel this year. I feel like they have more depth than people are not realizing about this team. Now, I know they didn't pick up the sexy stars that everybody wants to pick up, a superstar, just to see, like, you know, people like Stephen A. Smith that, you know, believe that you need a superstar, you need two or three or even five to just bleed with a team, think they're going to be super good. But we have seen one thing is that the Hawks, what they did last year, they have four All-Stars, and some of them were even considered to be, like, the high-tier stars, but they were All-Stars. And they pretty much won the Eastern Conference. I know they got knocked out by the Cavs last year and everything. But if you build a team like that around Melo, considering that he's a star, they have a better chance of doing more damage than they gave him credit for. And, you know, Derek Williams could be an X-factor, too, because if he can be what he was in college, that could be even a bigger boost for him. And if Porzingis can be, you know, just solid, you know, his first year, not so much pressure on him scoring like 20, 25 points. If he scores like 15, gets 8 rebounds, a couple blocks, I can live with that.
The key for him is post defense.
Yeah.
He plays defense, he's going to be on the floor, and if he's on the floor, then the Knicks have a shot. They're not going to be god-awful this year.
Yeah, unless you have Kyle Rowan starting at point guard. I still question about that. But
well, that's a whole we gotta get out of here. We'll be here a while talking about that.
Yeah, so I want to thank Christian Acker for being on the show, me and Mets Friday. I'll see what happens with the Mets do tomorrow at City Field. I want to thank Gary Davenport. Always does a great job on Bleacher Report, being an NFL analysis, getting his take on NFL in the fourth quarter of the season. You know, it's going to be a lot of interesting stuff this week. The Mets, see what they do. They're either going to the next round or they're going home this week. You know, we got Monday and Tuesday. We got a day off. They go to the Dodgers. If it goes to game five.
Mets win in four.
I say Mets win in four.
Mets win in four.
I always said it before. Their pitching, I believe, was better than the Dodgers to begin with. I know they don't have the bullpen to match up with them, but if the Stars go seven innings and they have their closer go out there, then they have a chance. As much as the Yankees, we didn't talk about them because they were out of the playoffs. So
there's
nothing to talk about them. They had a terrible offense. I said from the end of August that their offense has disappeared. Since this Severino's debut, their offense disappeared. But we'll see what happens throughout the season. We'll talk about the end of the season as well. I want to thank everybody for listening on the show. You can listen to it if on iTunes or anything on the podcast. I want to thank Brian Grace for doing a wonderful job on the board operator. Signing out. Good night. And hopefully the Mets win one or two games this week.
Mets in four, baby.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.